Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Series 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you listen to Series XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. The start of week three at Saratoga. And we're home today, and we'll come over later, but do the show tomorrow from Saratoga. And we certainly can't complain, considering that we thought that there was a potential for, you know, for some weather issues, and we got way less rain than anticipated, and might get some tomorrow. It's going to be gorgeous Saturday, and they're going to be drawing today, actually, for the weekend Saturday action, the big day with the Jim Dandy and the Vanderbilt, the Grade One, and the Bowling Green as well. Nice Saturday, big Saturday, really all over North America, because the Bing Crosby. So we got dueling Grade One sprints on both sides of the country, and got nice the Monmouth Oaks, yet another three-year-old filly main track race. you can't go a weekend, can't go a day without a week without getting another three-year-old filly race. The action too in Ontario, Victoria, the My Dear, the Alley Wow today, and another nice little collection of stakes at Pimlico coming up. So a big weekend, and you've also got the Florida sire races that used to be, I mean, at one time were huge money involved, and the Desert Vixen and the Dr. Fager, but $100,000 for the two-year-olds. I mean, there was a time where those were what? They're $250,000, $300,000, right? $400,000 maybe. There was huge money involved in those at one time. Anyway, people coming in, and we got a lot of people that, as we mentioned the other day, where you get the sense that, you know, as we inch closer, last week of July, we inch closer toward August, and as I said yesterday with Joe Glancy, the real heart of the meat is at hand, essentially. Today's action, a quick look ahead, and we'll come back to it later. I think Nick Tamaro is going to join us, and we'll get some midweek thoughts and opinions. And the nice feature today with this Honorable Miss. And while, you know, Bell's the one, certainly the horse to beat under any manner of evaluation. The mare, 7-5, Corey Lannery comes to town. Real good chance for a win. But I mentioned that Don't Call Me Mary yesterday going in, and I think she's moving in the right direction. Lake Avenue, of course, has got real bona fides coming out of the Better Roses. Ain't No Elmers down inside. Fits in different, you know, in most evaluations. And you've got Cherie with Reagan's Edge, who has certainly run races, particularly last fall. This is her second off the layoff, and if she can get back toward, you know, what she was doing in the prior S, it was a very good effort in the prior S behind Frank's Roquette. You know, ran into, you know, at the time, one of the top filly and mare sprinters in the country, and then, you know, was beaten less than a length in the Raven Run at Keeneland in October. So Reagan's Edge, second off the layoff, and preparing a Keeneland for this. So Cherie kind of coming in a little under the radar with Reagan's Edge. So, yes, 7-5 on Bell's the One makes sense, but this is a good race. A good race. The Honorable Miss. And, of course, will lead down the road to the Ballerina. This one, 6. The Ballerina, 7. The rescheduled Jonathan Kaiser today as well. $75,000 stake. So we get the a little bonus action for hopping. And group of 7, including that meme queen that we discussed yesterday with Kerry Brion. And that visit got a lot of nice response. People really enjoyed the extensive visit. Pretty much the same. Yeah, pretty much just a kind of the reshuffled deck of the race we discussed with Bill Gallo last week. Arch, my boy, for Mrs. Ostrom, and Fast Car for Bob LaPenta, Jack Fisher, Silent Player that Kerry Brion sends first out under her care for Mr. Naylor. Sean Clancy with City Dreamer. And Jack Fisher bodes well. Leslie Young. And the Mean Queen is mentioned. And the Happy Giant, Allison Fulmer, coming off a nice win at Tryon at the beginning of the month. So really three stakes today, too, because don't forget you've also got the state restricted race, the Stallion Series. And, you know, for those that, you know, to understand the distinction, these races are designed much like that Stallion race I mentioned, the Stallion races I mentioned in Florida, designed, same thing with the Maryland Million, making the priority Stallions in New York, and as opposed to sending your mare, you know, to Kentucky and you know, coming back. who was it the other day, over the weekend, that there was, oh no, it was that Derrynane the last week, Derrynane of Christophe Clement. This was the Quality Road New York bred out of the stake mare. You know, that's it's a New York bred, you know, in registration only. The Stallion Series is designed to promote the state's farms and those that stand Stallions. So, for instance, you've got the two Leia bands, three Leia bands, I should mention, the poor Leia band, and It's Gravy is a Freud for Kelly Breen, Ron Lombardi, FNX, yet another tragic scenario, and then War Dancer. And you know, War Dancer's an interesting story. Seems to be getting runners, and there's three of them in here. Step Dancer, who's the 2-1 for Barkley Tag, and Hayward Pressman. You've got Gator Bite. Kent Sweezy comes to town, obviously up from Monmouth. Actually put in a nice half mile for this Gator Bite, 15-1 off the maiden win against Open Company for 16. And Barrage, this one for the Palmers, David and Teresa Palmer, a maiden, but has run very well. And in fact, was beaten, you know, under a length and a half downstate in the Stallion race in June. So, very competitive. Barrage is 4-1. Give you an idea. Danny Gargan handling. Armando de la Serta started Barrage first at Gulfstream in May. So, the Stallion Series. And then the rest of that card, I've got everything. Not everything. I did races 5 through 10, and I picked Timbuktu in the state bred mile and 16th turf race for Brad Cox with Louis Saez, but I got to fill it out. I'm struggling with that race. I don't see a huge distinction between this group. You do have half a dozen that have made starts, and you know, then you've got Michelle Nevin with a firster, Toga Dancer. You've got Timbuktu. I got to tell you a funny Timbuktu story. There's a horse from Rudy with Irad L. Ventiquattro. And Maker has got Regal Empire. Those are the firsters. So it's, I don't know. I looked at clocking reports. I looked at pedigree, and I just really could not get a handle on how to fill this group out. So that's the luckily not part of the pick five. Pick five starts in race six, and it's a good sequence. Mile and an eighth, maiden special, and you do have an even money favorite of Mott's, but I don't see why Cody's Wish absolutely has to win. I understand he's got the big figure, you know, staring at you, but Absolute Courage for Suge, Pipeline for Chad. Chad's got a second horse, Beatbox on the outside. You know, these are all, you know, all of them have run, and quite a few of them. Pletcher, Vindictive is okay. I would say, a fairly notable bunch. And plenty of them ran races that ordinarily would have broken maidens. That Pipeline for Chad, this is John Gunther and Euro West. Came out of, ran into, as it happened, ran into First Captain in the debut. And then Soft Power and Ranger Fox in the second start. But, you know, mid-70s, upper 70s buyers. That race that produced Miles D knocked Absolute Courage and Vindictive, you know, prevented those two from winning. There's Cody's Wish was third behind Mahamel. So there's a lot going on in here. Beatbox came out of the Miles D race as well. I mean, this one, even I Am the Law, frankly, on the rail for Terra Nova and Cura Stables, the Mishwish, is okay. Has coming back to the dirt off a turf start, it was third at Belmont. So got to be fit, and this is a mile and an eighth. And boy, these mile and eighth races, you just basically want to figure out who is going to be, you know, on and near the lead. That has been the MO. So the start of the pick five. I'm anxious to talk to Nick. You've got a third level allowance with some familiar names, including Tama here for Chad, and Hungry Kitten is a price in here. Speak to Me of Summer. Christophe, Passing Out is okay for Suge. He's got both Hungry Kitten and Passing Out. That's a good group. You know, Sweet Melania for Pletcher is a decent 5-1. I mean, Tama here, I think, is the distinct horse to beat. You then have a first level allowance turf sprint as the eighth. Really good. Big package, Yes and Yes for Me. Little Noble Emotion. And then I thought that there was an interesting horse, the 11, King James, 12-1 on the outside. In there, then the Honorable Miss, and then it ends with you know, your basic maiden 40. This one going a mile and a 16th on the turf, and there's some pretty distinct players. I actually went for a price, and in fact, I made the Capital OTB play of the day, Bunker Hill, the 10 for Barkley Tag. Loses Louis Saez, but I thought Bunker Hill was the right price, 8-1. Dylan Davis aboard. For Barkley. So and there's a couple, you know, the couple of obvious horses like Prayer Book and Centurion, the Caribbean Gold, you know, the 3-1, 4-1, 5-1. But so under that scenario, I want a price. Fun sequence today, and the weather cooperated, as mentioned. So looking forward to it. We'll get some opinions from Nick. The rest of the week as well. Looking ahead, you know, tomorrow, the Morrissey State Breds sprinting, and then the Curlin on on Friday. Heard, as always, the Curlin is a very, I don't know, it's a divisive race. People think, why do you need this, the day before the Jim Dandy? Isn't it taking horses away? I understand. But it does have that, you know, non-winners of a graded stake over a mile. I like these typically. And this race, this edition actually ended up, you know, pulling together. We'll see, you know, we know some of the principles, of course, in the Jim Dandy that they'll draw today. But you've got that Miles D that I mentioned, that, you know, of Chad's. That is coming out of the maiden win, stretching out to two turns. Snowhouse for Brad Cox, last seen in the Dwyer, and an okay third, ran kind of an even race. Harvard from Rudy Brissett, who's won his last two, including at Churchill. You know, these horses are coming out of the Churchill dirt routes. They've been very tough here. First Captain for Shug, 3 for 3 out of the Dwyer win. Baron for Butchie Reed coming to town out of the Crowd Pleaser at Parks, which was off the turf and ended up being a mile and a 16th. So it gave Butch and owners Susan Quick and Christoph Fifferick, gave them, it's a Pennsylvania bred, gave them the idea to let's go on with it a little bit on the main track. They tried twice. It's very funny. This is a horse that has won three straight, and two of them, including, it, you'll remember, came to Belmont and won the Gold Fever, then won the Paradise Creek off the turf, and then won the Crowd Pleaser for state breds, PA breds. Why not? Let's just go on with it. He's a Wagelia out of a Diamond Mare. So kind of a, you know, kind of a very regional specialty pedigree. Collaborate for Safi Joseph off an allowance win at Gulfstream in June. You know, had tried the Florida Derby, picked up the last check, actually, was fifth. And then Dynamic One returns, the latest, most recent Kentucky Derby returnee. So there's your Curlin on Friday. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that set. And, you know, you got the heavy heads will then assemble on Saturday. Nice card to all 3 days here, getting into the weekend. So third week looking really good. Let's get a couple of notes before Keith Shamblin joins us. And the situation, we'll get an update from Keith on Vegas for NHC and a couple of other topics as well that sort of accumulated here over the last week. The racing yesterday, a quick, let me slip that in quickly, and a couple of other, we got a very sad follow-up note to that incident over the weekend at Ellis. I'll get to that in a second. But yesterday, out at Presque Isle in that hard spun, the Uptown Charlie Brown storyline is amazing, and wait for it, a winner at basically 3-5, followed up from the Paige McKenney win in April. Eddie Coletti for the Uptown Charlie Brown team, and Fantasy Lane originally bred this one, the six-year-old, 12th win in 30 career starts. I've said this a bunch of times. The Uptown Charlie Brown story is pretty crazy. It gets runners, and obviously they, you know, they take advantage of the situation, you know, the opportunities in Pennsylvania. Colonial yesterday, no problems yesterday, getting through the day, and should note in that seventh race, we got that Street Copper was absolutely the right horse. Papo and I had that conversation, the form to win, you know, indicators, and Street Copper was on top no matter how you looked at it, and then went out and won. Second choice, almost 5-1. We got 1160. Tried to, you know, turn it into a double, and that didn't work. Inhalation. Abated breath. Ed Vaughn, one that he owns. And 4-year-old gelding, second choice rustler from the rail, did not fire as the 3-2 favorite. So those were the two, those two allowances. Mike Tomlinson, Tomlinson out of control. What, three wins in the last couple of days? Dallas Stewart with a Valine Louisiana bred, a Sky Mesa, Platinum Sky, won a an optional claimer. I think Dallas has won two or three down there, but two for Tomlinson yesterday. And as I mentioned, we saw, actually got one for Blackout Racing and one for Diamond F Racing. And who else? Ken Huffman with a maiden breaker at a big price, $44.60 for Star Rules. Doris Tamillo, the owner, good job, and nice day. They had a nice for them to get to get through the day without vicious and dangerous weather, right? And of course, they're going to reschedule the Haas and all that. I'm going to save that. Actually, I'm not going to rough that. Okay. I mentioned, actually, Case, why don't you reach for Keith Shamblin? Let's get Keith in here and get going. Later, we've got the visit, of course, with Sid, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. I think, or at least we're hopeful, that we're going to catch up with Rob Address. We can't seem to catch up with Rob. So hopefully we get him in here. Talk about Maracuja's terrific performance on Saturday. I got a follow on the incident on Friday at Ellis, and we were in the car driving down, and I started to see the saw the picture and the accident that resulted in the section of the inner rail on the dirt course on the main track, and the sad news yesterday that Ellis coming out with a statement that Doris Heavy Watson, who'd been at Ellis on the crew for 20 years, and he had had a heart attack or stroke at the wheel, and that was the origin of the accident. They termed it a medical emergency, and I gotta say, because even without having heard on Friday, for, I don't know, a couple, maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours later, we were in the car driving to Virginia. Social media associated with this sport displayed as awful a response and set of instincts as you'll ever see. Just shameful. I mean, stunningly, incredibly shameful. Attacking Ellis and ridiculing. I've never seen anything like it. I'm just amazing. And I would have thought that hours later, when the fuller story came, that most everybody would be horrified and immediately delete their pathetic response to this. But no. Yesterday, saw one person double down on the awfulness. I had this discussion last week with Sean, and it's why it's just so it's just maddening and disheartening to try to interact, because there's a percentage out there that are so angry and miserable and unhappy. If you're so unhappy with the game, if it produces such a response in you, then just stop playing and just go do something else. Honestly, and I understand how frustrating it is to lose, and I get it, believe me. But I had some exchanges. Marty McGee and I talked. We were just aghast, I had to say something. Obviously, we just hearts go out to friends and family of Heavy Watson. I'm really, really irked by what I saw. It just really amazing. Let's talk about something everybody's looking forward to, and that being the NHC. We do have, obviously, with the flare-up that everybody's dealing with, that health departments and officials nationwide, worldwide, dealing with the variant and some increased, increased hospitalizations, etc. It's a little alarming, and the NHC and NTRA dealing with that reality as we look toward the end of August and assembling at Bally's. Keith Shamblin joins us. Keith, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. I even before some of the news came out about what to expect when we get to Bally's, I was reaching out to you yesterday. So a perfect opportunity for you to really give us all the details, to talk about how we're all going to adjust to the situation when we get to Vegas.
Well, it's less than a month away now. Of course, like August 27th through 29th, we've got a last chance, next chance tournament on August 26th. So it's right around the corner. Obviously, we're watching things closely in Nevada. The city is pretty much wide open, although they have put in a mask requirement for some employees at some properties, including the frontline employees at Bally's, where the NHC will take place. So we sent out a list of protocols as of today or yesterday relating to the NHC, and we think the proper approach at this point, at least, is whether or not NHC participants are vaccinated or unvaccinated when they enter the room, and it's a cavernous area, as you well know. You've been there, you were there last year, but sure. It's a 40,000 square foot former high-lie fronton with high ceilings. But when people enter, we'll ask that and require that they wear a mask when they move about in the event center and the NHC contest area. And when they're seated at their table, they can take their mask off if they'd like. If they'd like to keep it on, they certainly can do that as well. These are long, long, arduous days, and we understand that. But at this point anyway, we think the best approach is to wear masks when you get up from your table, you go make a bet, and so forth. And I have to say that having sent an email out to our participants yesterday, the overwhelming majority, other than just a few outliers, are just thankful and appreciate the fact that we're instituting policies designed to try to protect everybody. And that's gratifying, and of course we'll watch things between now and the end of August, but we're looking forward to a great event. We've got over 525 individuals who've qualified. We've got 625 entries. We've got a purse of nearly $3 million on the line, and it'd just be great to to get this one behind us, because it has been torture trying to get to August and put this event on. But we're looking forward to it.
As of this moment, there's no restrictions, specific directives, though, from you know, Clark County officials. I know, in fact, Mike Bacik, you know, about a week ago, 10 days ago, or whatever it was, you know, had noted that they were having, you know, a city, you know, a city meeting to, you know, to consider certain things. But so this is all, you know, kind of self. You know, self-suggested.
Yes, I mean, the governor, in fact, yesterday issued a mandatory mask initiative in Clark County, where Las Vegas is located, in high-density public areas. So, you know, there is movement in Nevada and in Las Vegas toward a mask mandate in some areas, but you know, we've got ours is a private area. It's a convention space where we host the NHC, and we can pretty much mandate whatever we want within that room, and that's why we've gone ahead and instituted a mask policy when people are moving about in the area.
Very good. All right. Well, it's silly to, or you know, just foolhardy to suggest or to assume that, you know, there may not be further adjustment between now and you know, by the time we get there.
I think there absolutely will be, whether or not those are to lighten restrictions or increase them.
Yeah.
Who knows? At this point, it's impossible to predict. But we're watching things closely, and we're going to do everything we possibly can to take care of our guests, and you know, we'll have sanitation areas, sanitizer areas throughout the facility, in addition to masks, and we'll have people cleaning the machines often, and that, you know, the contest play will occur on, and live bets will occur on, and just to take all the necessary precautions we have to ensure the health and safety of our guests.
You mentioned the reaction to the email yesterday. Any consideration to you know, remote? I mean, we had this conversation last year repeatedly, but anybody that is concerned about the situation and health restrictions, any provisions or any scenario that would allow somebody to, you know, to play remotely, even from their room, and I suppose some people might. Some people do that under normal circumstances. Come down, put all their plays in, and then, you know, watch from, you know, from the quote unquote safety and comfort of their hotel room.
That absolutely occurs every single year, and that'll be an option again this year for any individuals that are that don't feel comfortable sitting in the event center. We are not instituting any policies that would relate or allow individuals to participate remotely at this point. We have taken into consideration some individuals with medical conditions and have allowed them to transfer their berths to next year. There have been fewer than, you know, only a handful of those. But by and large, I think the overwhelming majority of individuals are looking forward to attending and participating in person, and you know, that's the plan now, you know, we're moving forward, and we'll handle these outlier situations on a one-off basis, but there just have not been many to this point, so that's that's good, but we're still going to take all the precautions we can in Las Vegas while we're there.
Well, we hope for the best and got to be prepared for any eventuality. Looking forward, though, to getting out. Well, both we're gonna go to Del Mar a few days before arriving in Vegas, and then we'll be on hand for Vegas all week. So, Keith, if there's anything further on this front, we'll pass it along immediately. I suppose we should also, before I ask you about some H2B topic, should also get an update on progress on the 22 season, because qualifications continue, and in fact, just on Monday, two seats for 2022, and it's notable. We've had the Beat Pick contest the last couple of summers, and people have been asking me, is there going to be one? I said, well, not until after Vegas, because it is a different scenario, right? That here's Holly and Holly Short and Michelle Ravencraft and you and everybody having to prepare for the for the 21 NHC right in the middle of a period where normally you're very active toward the next year's contest. So it's a little bit different. I suppose the one thing that it did alleviate, you didn't have to, when it came to Eclipse Awards, you didn't have the two things grafted onto each other.
No, not this year, unfortunately. But again, we are really looking forward to getting this 2021 NHC behind us. It's impacted so many things, including the Beat Bit contest, which, you know what, maybe we'll bring that back in for the Belmont Fall Meet other meets around the country during the fall, that Keeneland and so forth. So, but it's been an unbelievably crazy year. What's been great to see is the on-track contest come back, during the latter half of the second quarter of 2021, and just everybody is jumping on the calendar and looking forward to hosting contests of any kind, whether they're NHC qualifiers or other contests. It's just great to see, and great to see people back on track at these summertime venues around the country, and we hope it continues, and that we can look back on 2020 and the early part of 2021 and say, boy, can't believe we ever went through that. it's been a crazy, crazy year.
Well, a couple of notes outside of NHC topics, and NTRA obviously has any number of initiatives and a lot of the legislative work that we've talked about for years. And there was seemingly a problem that was on the horizon regarding the H-2B visa program. And I reached out to a variety of people as that, seemingly was on the horizon. Well, actually, while I was on vacation, but some of the terminology that had been involved in the labor appropriations portion of the infrastructure bill, that portion of the language was removed. There's still some issues to be addressed, Keith. And if you don't mind, bring everybody up to speed, because we had, we had assumed at the beginning of the year that restrictions on H-2B visas for farm help and backstretch help and seasonal employment and the employees that come to the U.S. for typically 6 months at a time, that those restrictions would at least be moderated, and there'd be more visas available, and some of the difficulties in terms of renewals and the formalities of it. Bring everybody up to speed on this.
Well, it's just an incredibly difficult and political issue in Washington, and it doesn't really matter what administration is occupying the White House. The H-2B and the which we participate in, or our trainers participate in, but also other major industries participate in, like the hospitality and the landscaping industries. We're a very small part of it, but it's an incredibly important part of our industry to trainers. That program is under constant attack, whether it's from the right or the left, meaning organized labor, which doesn't like these immigration policies. And, you know, the H-2A policy, while we'd like to see a redefinition or reclassification in that area to expand that program to include backstretch workers, it also is very, very political. It's very costly, and would take some real changes there to expand that program. So what we need in this country is, you know, major immigration reform, and it doesn't really matter whether you're on the left or on the right politically. What we need is a moderate, you know, a moderate program that takes into account all sides of the issue. But we've got to eventually fix this issue, and that's going to require major reform, and we don't see it occurring in the near future. In the short term, we're going to do everything we possibly can to protect and expand access to the H-2B program, which is so vital to trainers. And, you know, it's an issue that it impacts horsemen across the country, not just on the East Coast or the West Coast, meaning, you know, Saratoga, Gulfstream, Del Mar, Monmouth, et cetera, Golden Gate Fields. But it affects a lot of tracks, horsemen in the Midwest. We hear from Canterbury, we hear from Arlington, these same, Kentucky, these same issues that are impacting trainers. And we've just got to keep pushing the ball up the hill. But unfortunately, we don't see any real substantive change or improvement to the program in the near future. But we're going to keep trying, and we're obviously going to keep impressing upon the administration, Department of Labor, and others how important the H-2B program is to our trainers and our workforce on the backstretch.
There's one particular aspect in the last two or three days that, or maybe even over the weekend that kind of came to the surface, and that was a call for support. I mean, it's funny because we've over the last couple of months between the slaughter, the progress on the slaughter travel ban, and that is really seemingly at hand, depending on, you know, on where things go in the Senate. But the returning worker exception portion I saw the call go out, and the, you know, the Horse Council is part of this as well, and it's basically asking for, you know, for all of us to contact our representatives and express support for House Resolution 3897. And I'm going to send out the link to this. I know Joe Bacigalupo has been
sure,
you know, spearheading this, Keith.
He has been, and, you know, it is vitally important that we eliminate that language that can be so damaging to our sport and industry. And I think we're gonna get that done. But you know, it just shows how we've got to continually monitor the situation, or we can go backward in these areas very, very quickly. And so we're watching it closely, and we're cautiously optimistic that we're going to be able to protect the status quo. But as we all know, the status quo, in many, many ways, is unacceptable. So got to keep pressing ahead.
Well, and a quick synopsis, and Henry Cuellar in Texas has introduce this resolution, and what it would do would essentially address concerns of employers who rely on H-2B, and that you know, that's any number of horsemen and farms, but it would exempt the 66,000 annual H-2B workers. It would exempt them from, you know, the constant, you know, reapplying portion, and having to return home, and you know, the cumbersome element that, you know, is currently involved, and that would be, you know, that would be a boon, frankly, to, you know, our people that employ, because instead of having to, you know, having to replace, you know, constantly replace people. I mean, I know, I'll use a perfect example. One of Gary's foremen, one of Gary's assistants, that has been with him, Gary Siak has been with him for years and years, had to, you know, return home, and, you know, now is you know, seemingly in limbo getting back. I mean, it's very difficult, and, you know, it puts added pressure, as if horsemen, you know, and farm operators need any added pressure. It puts added pressure on them. You got to go hire. You got to train. You've got it. It just individual people on the shed row that, you know, instead of handling four horses, now they're handling six. It affects the care and the attention to detail to the horses. I mean, I'm sure people think that this is a completely, you know, mundane aspect, but it absolutely operates at the, you know, at the central core to, you know, the way in which, you know, the game operates and the, you know, the industry operates. There's no cogs more important.
No question, and removing or expanding that cap is a huge priority for the NTRA. Whether or not we can get it done in this political environment remains to be seen, but that absolutely remains the goal, is because, you know, we hear from horsemen almost every week from some horseman on some backstretch, or a racing director or a racing secretary who just says, our men can't find work. Our men and women on the backstretch, our trainers can't find work help. And it is a nationwide problem that we've got to address.
Well, I wanted to get this out, and I'm kind of glad that I kind of paused and was waiting to bring it up, because part of the concern over this had actually the sands had shifted, so, you know, what was termed harmful language had already, you know, quickly was addressed. Now there's this opportunity. So I'll send this out, Keith, and meanwhile we will press forward and look forward toward Vegas and NHC, and let's hope, you know, everybody's cautious, and I suppose the best advice for players that are coming, get vaccinated now, please. Anybody that's coming out to Vegas, if you're wavering, if you haven't gotten vaccinated, I just you have to do it. It for yourself and for those around you.
Well, we are encouraging everyone to get vaccinated, and We could not agree more. Just before I jump, Steve, I wanted to just mention briefly.
Sure.
We're at the NTRA. We're supporting Jockeys Across America this Saturday. Jocks around the country, including there in Saratoga and Del Mar and at 21 other tracks around the U.S., are going to be wearing armbands in support of the PDJF, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, and also paying tribute to National Disability Independence Day, which was earlier this week, and that was marked the 31st anniversary of the Americans with Disability Act, which was just a major civil rights law passed by the first George Bush in the White House back in 1991, and has meant so much to so many millions of people, including permanently disabled jockeys. So it's a great cause, and we hope everyone will get out to a racetrack this Saturday and pay tribute to these jockeys, and hopefully we'll raise a little money for the PDJF, which is a great cause.
Absolutely, and I know we've got another coming up early next week. We've got another on one of the dark days. We've got another Gumbo Fest, this time Michael Bajic, and he's bringing one of the top chefs in New Orleans as well. So it should be that's one option, but there'll be any number of there's a laundry list of activities here and everywhere, and this has become a regular feature each summer. I appreciate you including it, Keith, in the update.
Well, we look forward to talking between now and Las Vegas.
Oh, without fail. And are we going to see you here by any chance? You coming to Saratoga between now and then?
I hope to be up there sales week and possibly
Perfect.
For the Whitney.
Excellent. All right, so we will see you soon. Keith Shamblin, everybody, and NTRA with the variety of things to keep track of, including this situation that came to not to a head yesterday, but the update and the advisory regarding mask instructions. That's fair, right? Mask instructions for the ballroom at Bally's, and how to handle that, and we'll just hope that we don't get any further issues to have to that any worsening of conditions. So let's do this. Might as well take a top of the hour break here. Going to have Sid Fernando join us next. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. So stay with us. Back after this with Sid.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Thoroughbred horse racing returns to the home state of Secretariat when Colonial Downs in Virginia conducts its summer season with a new afternoon racing schedule and minimum daily purses of $500,000. The season runs from July 19th to September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Mark your calendars for Colonial Downs' signature event, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, on Tuesday, August 31st. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs now running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back approaching the top of the hour, just a couple of minutes, and Sid Fernando is going to join us. And I know it's funny. Sid sent me yesterday. I think we had just gotten off the air a little bit, and Sid sent me a note. And doesn't always get a chance to listen every day, but a lot of people listen at their leisure, of course. But he sent me a note and said, I'm going to be writing this about Lizzie Merriman, and I said that's so funny. I had her on, and Sid had has got an angle on the story to consider, and there were so many things.